Shame, and I think it's probably still fairly general condition that we Catholics don't really know much about the Bible. I mean, for years, when I was growing up, of course, I said, you don't have to know anything about the Bible. We've got bishops. Well, I don't know how much about the Bible the bishops knew, for that matter, as I will mention later on. But we tend to think in a sort of fundamentalist way, I believe, by and large, that namely that this is kind of dictated, this stuff was dictated. We have all those lovely Renaissance paintings of an angel speaking into the ear of Matthew, you know, and Matthew diligently taking down everything the angel said. Well, it did not happen that way. The evidence for that is overwhelming, both interior and exterior evidence. But I bring all this up because this thing that Luke does consistently, namely to interpret this scandal, which was the crucifixion of Jesus, the execution of Jesus, he wanted to take the edge off of that. Because as I said, quoting Paul last week, that it was a scandal to the Jews, a stumbling block to the Jews, and pure nuttiness to the Gentiles. Okay, so what he does, of course, and it's very clear that he does this quite consciously, is create this scenario whereby the death of Jesus was inevitable. Inevitable. It was all part of the great cosmic plan of God, fulfillment of all the prophets. Well, as I've said, if it were inevitable, then the whole thing is a big charade, you know. There's no freedom, there's no responsibility, and we're all kind of set free, you know, to be washed in the blood of the Lamb, or whatever kind of metaphor you want to use. So we need to hear what Luke is trying to say, and why he's trying to say this, namely to take the sting out of Jesus' death by making it seem as if it had to happen. But we know even from the scriptural witness that the Messiah, who was supposed to be a descendant of David, a royal figure, was never supposed to suffer. The model of a suffering Messiah was totally alien to the Jews. The Messiah was going to come in triumph and restore Israel, and nobody ever thought you'd have a bloody Messiah. And that's part of the creativity of these guys as well. So it's because, as I said, on Easter Sunday, because so much of Christianity seems to be happening over our heads, to us, rather than with our full participation, I think this warning is constantly useful, both for me and for, I hope, for you too. It didn't happen that way, but Luke, in his own creativity, wrote it this way. Okay? We see all this all over. All over the scriptures, of course. And the whole point, the linchpin of this whole thing that holds this narrative together, this wonderful passage about the trip to Emmaus that Rembrandt immortalized in one of those glorious paintings of his, is that they recognize him in the breaking of the bread. That's what Luke has set this up to highlight. The breaking of the bread. So what does this evoke? It evokes Holy Thursday, of course. The Last Supper. And again, as I said, on Holy Thursday, the Eucharist, which is how these guys came to understand that gesture of Jesus, that wonderful metaphorizing of himself. When Jesus creates this great metaphor of himself as bread, as shared, as broken, as uniting people. That verb, which is the Eucharist, cannot be separated from the other verb, which of course is also on Holy Thursday, which is the washing of the feet. If you don't understand together, then we don't understand it at all, really. And communion becomes that holy thing, you know, that thing out there. Okay, all of this is kind of preliminary to what Luke wanted to say. We know from Paul, writing a generation after the death of Jesus, that they really did continue to memorialize the life and death of Jesus in the Eucharist. The letter to the first letter to the Corinthians makes it very clear. I handed on to you what was given to me the night before he died. Okay, so they have already developed an understanding of that gesture of Jesus as this great metaphor of self-donation, which is wonderful in itself. Jesus as poet. Jesus as turning himself into metaphor. A real metaphor. But I think we can take this further today. You look at the world today, and by and large, it's a fairly heartless scene. I mean, we don't need Assad and Mubarak and Gaddafi, you know. We have all kinds of other figures outside ourselves and to some extent inside ourselves too, to testify against the reality of this utterly generous, self-giving man, Jesus. So I think one legitimate way of reading this business of recognizing Jesus in the breaking of the bread is to extend that to wherever in the world we find bread broken and shared. Above all, with the people who have no bread. Whenever that happens, that's counterintuitive, you know? It just flies directly in the face of the me-first frame of mind that I think dynamizes the lives of most of us most of the time. So this is a kind of injunction to hope. Whenever we see bread broken, whether real bread or bread in whatever form of concern, above all for the poor, God is real. Jesus has been raised. The Spirit of God is still active in the world.